We have on occasion these Sundays that are kind of between series, and this Sunday is one of them. Next Sunday, we have the Sanctity of Human Life Sunday. We got some cool things we're going to do, some great people that are going to be here with us to think about the dignity of human life as it relates to our society, and try to raise our awareness and understanding of some of the unseen people, even within our own community. That's next week. So every once in a while, we have these kind of weird Sundays where it's not really in a series, and it's not like before Easter or Christmas or whatever, and it's just kind of a standalone. And on occasion over the years, I've done what I call an unsermon. Now, an unsermon, that is not a word. I made it up. It's a made-up word. So it basically means that every once in a while, I want to take some time, and I want to talk about something in the church. And instead of doing kind of what I typically do, which is explain a passage and then relate it to our life, I want to talk a little bit more specifically about something related to our church. And we're going to do that this morning. So if you came for kind of a traditional sermon, this would be a little bit different than we usually do. But hopefully a good challenge anyway. I do want to begin by reading this passage of Scripture. This is out of John 13. It says, "Little children, yet a little while I am with you. You will seek me, and just as I said to the Jews, so now I also say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another." Now, we as Christians sometimes get a bad rap, and if you listen to the news, both on the radio and on TV, every once in a while they mix in these ideas that we as Christians, and we are blamed for everything from being a cult to being non-thinking and unintelligent and to being homophobes and, you know, a whole list of other things. I listened to a radio talk show just recently, and the guy that was on the radio spent almost the entire time apologizing to the world for Christians. And he listed in there everything from Salem witch trials to the Crusades to the killing in Jesus' name to being homophobic to throwing people out of the church. And the list just went on and on and on. And he apologized on air after every one of those Salem witch trials, Crusades, all of those, for what Christians have done to the world. Now, I do think that there are things that Christians have done over the years that really has cast a long and kind of dark shadow on the name of Christ. You know, Jesus creates this church to be a good place, and he designed it to be a thrilling place and a great place for us. But along the way, a lot of Christians, you know, we're all just a bunch of imperfect people. We have done things that have cast kind of a negative light on the church, and I think in some ways that's true. So I was listening to this other radio talk show. You see, when I'm in a car, I don't listen to music. Drives my kids bananas. We'll be on a trip. I'm like, hey, let's listen to another sermon. They're like, no. So anyway, it's neither here nor there. Anyway, so I was listening to this guy. And this guy was talking about mega churches. And he was bashing all of these mega churches for all the money they spend on their buildings and on their salaries and all these crazy things that they spend their money on. And he began to talk about some of the building projects going on in America right now. And he talked about First Baptist Church of Dallas. And he said that First Baptist Church of Dallas recently built an addition onto their church that cost $50 million. That's the addition. When they got done with the addition, they announced that they were going to remodel the old building for $112 million. Now, they went over budget on the old building by only $18 million. So they spent $50 on the new building. They spent $130 million on the renovation. They spent $180 million in their building renovation. Now, what do you think of that? $180 million. Now, have you heard these stats where you can plant a church in Africa for $6,000? If that stat is true, do you know how many churches First Baptist Church of Dallas could have planted in Africa with $180 million? 30,000 churches. Isn't that amazing? That's pretty amazing. So what happens when you and I hear these kinds of stats and these numbers? We can jump on certain bandwagons and we can talk about all the crazy ways that money are spent, and we look at those kinds of numbers, 180 million, and we're like, how imprudent is that? And sometimes we get a little self-righteous, I think, and we think, wow, we would never do that. So if we as a church had $180 million, would we spend it on our building? I would say, of course we wouldn't, because we'd be spending it on the pastor's salary. And that's the end of the sermon. All right, so let's say that somebody in the church dies, they leave us $180 million. And, you know, there's a write-up in the newspaper, a church has $180 million. What would we do with $180 million? Now, what we would probably do is we'd begin to have all these meetings, right? We'd have a business meeting, we'd all sit around, we'd talk about how are we going to spend our money. Then we'd probably have little focus groups, and we sit with little adult groups, and we give, you know, our leaders these request forms. How would you like to spend the money? What do you need for your budget? What do you need for your ministry? And we talk it to death about all these ways that we could spend the money. But everybody in Hastings would want to know one thing. How are we going to spend the money? So then the staff starts driving Porsches and BMWs and all these cool things. You know, then we gold plate our sign out front. Then we take our building and we build a second addition, and it's beautiful. We kick all the doctors out of the medical park. Which way am I facing? Whatever way is over there. We kick them all out. We buy their building, because sometimes we use their parking lot anyway. Now we have an overflow. And let's say over here we build a gym and a family life center, and it's a big, cool thing for us. Well, that would be really fun. And so then we decide we're going to grow and expand even more, and we buy the bowling alley. You know the bowling alley over there? You know why we buy the bowling alley? Because it's ugly, and we demolish it. For no other reason than it's ugly. So we buy it, and we get rid of it. And we have a big ceremony over there. It's really fun. So then we get tired of spending money on our building, and we decide that we're going to offer trips for the church. And so you can take a trip to the Holy Land. Hey, if you're a member of this church, you get to go to the Holy Land for free. You know who would sign up for membership? Everybody. All right. And so we sponsor this trip to the Holy Land. We sponsor this, hey, walk in the footsteps of Paul tour. We sponsor a trip to Egypt. You can go to Egypt and see the pyramids. And then we're going to walk like the Israelites did from Egypt all the way to Israel, which, by the way, you can't do. There's these things called checkpoints and countries, but go with me on it. All right. So we do all of these things because, of course, we have the money to do it. And then after 10 years, we have really cool buildings. We have a cool new building over there. We get rid of all those doctors over there. I know who some of you are. We have our whole spot, you know. We level all the, it's just a great thing. We've had all these great trips. Everybody in Hastings is a member of our church. Gonna go on a free trip. Why not? Right? After 10 years, do you think anybody would stop and go, what do they actually do with the money? Did they actually make an impact? Did they help the community? Did they do anything except spend it? And people would ask that. And, you know, after 10 years, would we be just that church that had all the money, the richest church in Hastings with the cool building? And I think somebody somewhere along the way would finally begin to say, hey, what's actually being done for the kingdom? Like, are people coming to Christ? Are ministries happening for the people of the community? What are they actually doing? Do we matter in Hastings? Or are we just another church? You see, in some ways, churches are good for a community, but in some ways, they're not. We don't pay taxes as a church in Hastings. And it doesn't matter how big a building we build. If we get rid of the doctors over here, Hastings actually loses income by us doing that. So after a while, at some point, we're just another building, another organization. That's all we would become. And I would guess, just the way it spins out in my mind, that we would become a little bit of a joke. We're like, hey, you know what? If you need money, go to that church. If you're starting a new business and you need clients, go to that church. You want to have a zoning change or something, well, all the politicians go to that church, you go over there. And we could become a joke. Now, we're still in the same really nice building, it's still really nice people, we have all of that stuff, we're not worried about the money. But after 10 years, would we become a joke in Hastings? Only because of the way we spent the money. It's easy to think about, I think, what we could become if we were given that money. And I would argue that it would not be good for us in any way. So then we think about, you know, this $180 million. We think about First Baptist Church and all the ways that they spend the money and all the crazy things they did and, you know, the remodeling and the addition and all of that. And we can kind of sit back and we can kind of judge them and go, wow, $180 million. That's, wow, what a waste of money. You know, what do you do with your building? What about the rest of the ministry and all of that? And we can become very judgmental towards the way that they spent their money. But are we equally willing to ask ourselves the same question with our $750,000 budget? Now, $750,000 is still a lot of money. That's $750,000 that we as a church budget every year for what we do. And so we could ask the same questions. Do we matter in this town? Are we a joke in this town? Are we taking up space, not even paying taxes into our own community? And somehow we're absolved of that because we're a church. See, I think it's really easy to ask those questions of other churches and other places and other ministries, but it's far more uncomfortable to ask those questions of ourselves. We can throw rocks at other churches, but ignore the pebble in our own eye when it comes to these questions. And I think that's why Jesus' words in John 13 matter. And I want to read them again, because the last couple sentences there are so important. It says, little children, yet a little while I'm with you, you'll seek me, and just as I said to the Jews, so now I say also to you, where I am going you cannot come. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you're my disciples if you have love one for another. I want you to take a second, and I want you to think in your own mind, if someone were to ask you, what makes for a great church? Just in your own mind, what would be the first three things you would say? What makes for a great church? Or if I were to find a great church, or if I moved to a new community and I was looking for a great church, these would be my big three. The reason that's important is because Jesus here says that his church will have the mark. The mark. It'll have a mark. And I want you to be clear on the mark. This is a mark, Jesus says, that his people, his church will wear on the outside. It's not just like a, you know, this is just a heart thing with Jesus. No, this is something that's on the outside. It's like a tattoo. It's like a crazy hairdo. It's like a garment. It's something that you can see on the outside, something you can smell on the outside. And Jesus says, my people are going to have this mark. So regardless of what you think about, you know, a great church is going to have these top three things, and I want to see what their building's going to be like. I want to see what their worship's going to be like. I want to see what their sermons are going to be like. I want to see all of these things. Jesus says there's one thing that's going to set my people apart, and it's not building, it's not program, it's not budget, it's not attendance, it's not a structure, it's none of those things. The thing that sets my people apart from everybody else is one thing: how they love each other. That is what sets Christians apart. And Jesus says when people see this, and they see these outward manifestations of this real love, they will go, wow, look at that. They must be a Christian. Or look at that. Jesus must really mean something to them. Look at that. Maybe Jesus is worth considering. So they see something in us. They see something we do and how we love each other. Again, not the building, not the budget, not the expenditure, not the program, not the community, none of those things. Only here, how we love each other. So there's kind of two cool ideas in this, and I'd love to spend some more time on it. But the first thing is that Jesus, he first talks about those who see the mark, and he says that all people will see this mark. Now, that's interesting because if we kind of divide up all people in the way that Jesus does in Matthew 25, you have the sheep and the goat, you have the believers and the unbelievers. Jesus says, all people will know that you are my disciples, my followers, my peeps, if you love one another. But I think he especially means those outside the church. And I conclude that because people inside the church already know they're Christians. It's the people on the outside that are wondering if anything matters on the inside. So I think he's really targeting people outside the church that see how Christians love each other, and they draw a conclusion about Jesus based upon what they see in us. That's a fascinating idea. Second one is that he talks about this mark, but it's not, this mark is not just love, like love everybody, gush love all the time, you know, love the community, love people, love justice, love a nation, love. He specifically is talking about how Christians love each other. How we here, the people in your row, the people behind you, the people in front of you, how we love each other. And he says that's the mark. Now, you can love a lot of different things, and you can love, you know, you can even love the buildings, and you can love programs, and you can love the cool chairs we have. And there's a million things you can love in the church, but specifically, how we love each other, tangibly, visibly, on the outside where people can see how we love each other, he says that's the mark. Now, that's interesting. And I think he has a couple assumptions here, and one is that it's possible to be a Christian and not show the mark. In other words, it's possible to be a Christian and never love other Christians in the way that he's talking about here. But if you do that, no one will see and no one will care and no one will know you are a Christian. But it's possible. And I also think he suggests that people will judge you and I on whether or not they really see this. That people outside the church will judge the value and the quality of this church in some way based upon whether or not we are really loving each other, tangibly, visibly, on the outside in ways that people can see. Are we loving each other that way? And he doesn't say, oh, they might judge. He says they're going to judge. They're going to look. They're going to watch. They're going to see. And they're going to draw some kind of conclusion. And they're going to interpret what they see based upon their observation. So I think it leaves us with a question. And that question is, do we show the mark? Do we have it here? Are we doing this well? Are we just going through the motions? Do we matter? Do people see how we're working, how we're doing, how we're loving on each other, and make any conclusion about Jesus based upon us? That's a good question. In a lot of ways, we can't expect the world to believe that the Father sent the Son and that Jesus' claims are true and Christianity matters if they don't see something that is of value here. If they don't really see love happening here, then why would they ever draw a conclusion that Jesus matters at all? Think of it this way. And maybe it's a little overdone, but it's all right. Could we take pictures of the tangible ways that we love each other and distribute those pictures in the community? Now you think, how are you going to do that? I'm just talking theoretically. These are observable. You can see them. You can smell them. They're on the outside. It's easy to take a picture of ways that we are loving each other. Do we have those? Are we showing those? Are you a part of doing that? Now, my time is going to be very thin today, but I find that there are people that do it and there are people that receive it. But I think in the community of the church, we all do and we all receive. So it's not like, hey, I'm on one side or hey, I'm on the other. We're all on both sides. Sometimes we receive the love, sometimes we give the love. So churches like ours, churches have reputations. And we have a reputation in this town. And churches can have reputations for, you know, big buildings and cool programs and lots of good ministry going on. And churches can have a reputation for being, you know, ineffective and backwards and irrelevant and all kinds of things in between. But some of those things, you know, the programs and the buildings and ministries are not the things that Jesus talks about when he says, this is what sets you apart. What sets you apart is the way you tangibly, practically, hands-on love each other. And he says that when people see those things, they draw a conclusion about Jesus. So part of what Jesus is saying here that is so fascinating is that he is suggesting that observable love in the church is great evangelism. Observable love, practical love, tangible love, hands-on love in the church, among the people of the church, is great evangelism, because people on the outside of the church, they hear and they see and they smell and they watch and they observe and they hear the stories of what the church is doing on the inside, and they go, man, I got to explore this Jesus thing. So observable love in the church is great evangelism. Now, there are a few people in this church that see what happens behind the scenes in the way that I do and the way the staff does, and sometimes those are good things, and sometimes those aren't good things. But let me tell you, there are times that I am shocked by the way this church loves its members. And I can stand and literally give example after example after example of the ways that you guys have loved on each other. And some of it is the faithfulness of a Sunday school teacher or an Awana worker. And then I hear these stories of these teachers that are going to games, that are going to programs, going to musicals, and just going the extra mile to make sure that that little kid knows, I love you. So the tangible part, the observable part is, hey, he came to my concert. And people hear and I see those things. I get emails and I listen and I watch the kind of funny things, and I kind of smile at some of the things that happen in these emails. Because what happens, the email goes out that somebody's having a surgery. Then immediately another email that goes out that says, hey, let's provide meals. And then all of a sudden, all you women, let me tell you, you guys spend some money on food, but you spend way more time making that food. That says, I love you. I know it looks like a casserole, but it's really, I love you. And we have a ton of people that spend a lot of time cooking as a way of loving each other. And so what happens then is that as you guys love each other, I begin to hear stories, and Matt hears stories of people that see and they're like, you know, why do you do that? What's going on at that church? Why do you guys do this kind of thing? And then when we do it to somebody that's outside the church, they're shocked because people don't do that. People don't make meals. People don't love each other. People don't show up to build a garage. People don't show up with a tub of food like we did our Thanksgiving project. People don't do this. And they're watching, they're interpreting, and they're drawing a conclusion. And Jesus says that's great evangelism because it's observable, it's tangible, it's real love. And when you guys love each other that way, and there are so, so many examples of you guys doing it, Jesus says that makes for great evangelism. Because people see it, they hear about it, and they go, Jesus might actually be worthy of thinking about. And on that same, the same side, we have all these unsung heroes that they serve just because they love Jesus and they love people. In fact, can I just tell you, this morning, our nursery workers got here late. And we just had two of our guys in our church. They're like, I'll jump in. Two guys right? Now, they went in there and they were on their knees praying that they didn't have to change a diaper. It's really true. I peeked my head in there. It's actually true. Okay, it wasn't true for Emil because he does it all the time. But Nick, I think it's been a while, right? If you want to go back and practice, I'm sure Lindsay would think it was funny. All right, so we just had somebody jump in and they say, you know what? So that these parents can leave their kids and go to church, I'm going to stay in here. This is an act of love. And we have this kind of thing happening all the time with people working on our benevolence team. And, you know, we have praise band and tech people. And what you guys don't see that I see is that some of these people are here during the week and they're running wires and they're testing speakers. And, you know, Danny Hunt's back there on the computer. I'll come in here to pray and I'll walk around the corner. I'll think it's empty and she'll say, hi, and it'll scare me to death, you know. It happens all the time. And I'll be walking through the church for something and there's Sunday school teachers in there on a Friday working on their class. There's tons of things that are going on that I see a few, Jesus sees them all. And those are just acts of love. Love for Christ, love for his church. And what people see and they hear and they are a part of that, they make conclusions about Jesus and whether Jesus really matters to you. And when they see that and they see you a part of that, they conclude that Jesus matters to you. Because I think he does. One of the things that I've noticed in the last year is that we're doing a much better job of noticing new people. And when they come in and there's tons of people that go over and they greet them, hi, are you new, and all of that. But here's one of the things that I've noticed. We're doing a much better job of watching out for those that are maybe a little different than us. Maybe there's special needs that we have several of those that we love here. But then we have people that come in and maybe they dress a little bit differently. Maybe they smell just a little bit different. You know, in this last year, I know of several stories where it's happened a few times, where a homosexual man was here, just showed up to church. And, you know, he heard me and he heard the music and all of that. But what impressed him was the number of people that came over and they said, hey, we're glad you're here. That is great love. And we're doing a better and better job of that. I also think, you know, another way that this love, this tangible, this real love is shown is even in our finances. That's kind of where we started. We have a church budget that we approve, about $750,000, $750,000, and so what happens with the church budget is that you kind of guess how much is going to come in the next year, right? So then people like me and people like the board, we sit around all year going, I wonder if it's going to come in. I wonder if it's going to happen. I wonder what's going to, you know, week to week and all of that. But what what that money doesn't tell, and the story that it doesn't tell, is this kind of love right here. Because yes, we brought in almost $750,000 last year, but that doesn't tell the whole story. Because I know a bunch of you, yeah, you regularly support the church, but you are also supporting YFC missionaries and Allison James and Mark Gooden, and you're sending money to Wellspring. You're doing all kinds of other things that are, they're outside the bounds of just the church stuff, but you're thinking of the kingdom. And as that money is spent and as those donations come in, this says something about what is really in your heart. And I know some of those stories. And so I am just so thrilled at those that have just really learned that whole secret that God loves a cheerful giver. And it says something about a church. It says something about the people in the way that they spend money. And for many of you, it really says what's in your heart. And that makes for great evangelism, I believe. You know, in a church like ours, statistically, 80% of our regular general fund budget comes in from people who give regularly, meaning that 80% of all of our church budget money, all the monies that come in, are from people that are giving, you know, every week or every month. Only 20% come in from those kind of one-time gifts. And what that means is that the majority of our budget, the majority of the programs of this church, and this church is really supported by people like you who have bought in to this ministry, this church, and it's become a regular part and a habit of yours to give to the kingdom work. And so when people see the tangible side of that, the way we spend money and the programs we have, That is really a reflection of the real love that you have. And it says something about Jesus. Well, my time's running out, so let me just kind of fast forward here. Let me give you four great ways to do great evangelism through observable love in 2019. Four great ways to do great evangelism through observable love. Four ways that you this year within the church, here in the body of believers here, that you guys can do great evangelism, okay? Four ways. Number one, unusual acts of care. And I think we're, for the most part, we're pretty good at this. This would be like the meals and those kinds of things. But here's what I want to say about this. Often the people that are cooking the meals, for instance, they're generally the same people. And what I would like to see is the pond or the pool of those people, the number of people doing that, increase. And so we always have these opportunities for tangible ways. We sent out just a couple off the top of my head. We had a lady, we wanted to help her finish her garage. Bunch of guys showed up, hammer, tool pouch, they went to work. I know of a guy who had some storm damage, needed some people to come help him roof. A bunch of guys showed up and they just kind of helped him roof. I know of some women that they had a car problem. They called a guy. He got a couple guys together, went over, fixed the car. So it's not just, you know, cooking, you know, but nothing says love like cooking. Just thought that out there. But there are lots of ways that many of you are showing unusual acts of care. And what I would like to see in 2019 is for the pool or the number of people doing that to increase. Get that on your radar a little bit. Number two, epic forgiveness. You know how you never, if you want to never have to ask somebody to forgive you, it's very easy. Don't have any friends. Don't know anybody. Isn't that true? Now, here's why I bring that up. The closer you get to people, the more likely it is that you're going to have to say, I'm sorry, right? So here we have a church like ours, and the closer we get to each other, the more opportunities we'll have to say, I'm sorry. But if we keep each other at arm's length, it's safe, but it'll never be satisfying. So the epic forgiveness is also a plea to spend time drawing close to each other, doing things together, joining small groups, being in an adult ministry, so you get to know the people of the church. And as funny as it sounds, I could say, here's my big thesis. Get to know each other well so you can say, I'm sorry. It sounds backwards, but it's really the satisfying part of life is in the love that we share. So don't be afraid to get close to each other, to enjoy each other, to have those kinds of friends here. I once called it irrational forgiveness. The reason I call it irrational forgiveness is because we live in a world where people feel entitled to hold grudges and to be mad. Well, when the Christian comes along and shows irrational forgiveness, people go, whoa, that's amazing. And I've seen it in marriages, and I've seen it in churches and relationships and friendships and all kinds of different ways. And it makes Jesus look so good when we give each other irrational forgiveness. Number three, commitment to each other no matter what happens. All right, so here's the shocker. If you stay in the church long enough, somebody will do something you don't agree with. And it could be the leadership. They maybe make a decision. It could be somebody in your class. It could be a program. It could be a teacher. Eventually, somebody's going to do something, and you're not going to like it. Newsflash, you might be that person that does something that somebody else doesn't like, right? So we live in this kind of church, kind of weird moment where what Americans tend to do when they don't agree is they just leave, right? I'm going to take my ball and I'm going to go home. If you don't do it my way, I'm out of here. Well, that doesn't make Jesus look great. What makes Jesus look great is to stay and work through problems. It's to stay and commit no matter what happens. I got a letter from a guy in the church a while back, and he was writing about a decision that the board made and how he was not in favor of this decision. But he wrote in that letter, he said, My love and respect for you guys is far more important than my need to be right. That is the kind of commitment I'm talking about here. Because things are going to come. I mean, we have like 750 people that call this church home. It's not going to take long for somebody to say something, do something you don't agree with. In a lot of ways, being a part of a church is a lot like a marriage. For better, for worse, for richer, for poor, I'm in. And that kind of commitment, people see on the outside, and it makes Jesus look really good. So along the way, if I do something, you do something, the person next to you does something, if Matt does something, which is pretty likely, the board does something that you don't like, don't run for the hills. Stay. Let's work on it together. And that makes Jesus look really good. Number four, respect differences. Let's respect our differences. A couple weeks ago, I had my 25th wedding anniversary, and I love my wife, but what's funny about marriage is that sometimes, no matter how much you love each other, you don't agree. She can't see it from my point of view. I can't see it from her point of view. So who's right? Me. But we just can't see it from each other's point of view, right? So here's what I'm learning, and don't ask her, but she can confirm I have plenty of work to do in this area. I'm learning that, you know, in the first 25 years, we fought over all kinds of stupid things. And every once in a while, I look back and I think, why did we fight about that? Like, did you ever get done with a fight with your spouse, and later on you go, that was the stupidest thing in the world to fight about? Like, really? Socks? We're going to fight about that, you know, of all the stupid things? Well, what I have learned is that there are a lot of things that in the moment seem like they're really important, but in the bigger scope of things, they don't really matter. So what we have at our church is we have a lot of people that have different opinions about lots of different things. It may surprise you to know that we have Republicans and Democrats here. We have pre-trib, mid-trib, post-trib people. We have no-trib people. We have no-rapture people. We're all sitting here together. We have people in our church that don't believe in medicine or doctors. And we have other people that homeschool, and some that do, some that don't. We have people that believe in the gifts of the Holy Spirit and all the differences, and women in the church, and they could be pastors, they can't be, and on the list goes. Well, with all of these differences, we only really have two options, maybe three. Number one, we can just force everybody to agree. Nobody wants to live in that kind of world. We can, number two, just pretend like everybody agrees. Let's just not talk about these things. And I would suggest that's a very immature way of looking at anything in life. But number three, the best way to handle the differences is just to give each other room to be different, to have a different opinion. Let me tell you, here's a couple, something that'll just blow your mind. And I know my time is done. But have you ever had the thought that goes like this? The Holy Spirit is leading every single one of us, guiding and leading us, right? If that is true, how can we have so many opinions? Try to wrap your mind around that in a way that makes sense to God but doesn't make sense to us. I had a great aha moment in seminary. And I, you know, I've told you a couple stories along the way. Grew up very conservative in this really fundamental church and all of that. Well, as I kept on going in my education, I realized that there were a lot of people that they love the Lord as much as I do, if not more. They know the Bible way better than I do, and yet they don't agree with me. And it was an aha moment to realize that there are a lot of people that love the Lord that don't agree with me. And for some reason, the Lord is okay with that. I'm the one that struggles with it. It was a great aha moment. Now, you all know that I have opinions, and so do you. And I do believe that there are some mountains that are worth dying on. But what I'm learning is that those mountains are surrounded by foothills, and those arguments are not worth having. So let's respect the differences. And I find it way more fun to poke fun at the differences, to enjoy them and to laugh at them. And instead of trying to like conform everybody to one common thought, and I think in diversity there's much more wonder of who our God is and the grandeur of who He is. My time's done, but let me just say that God has so richly blessed us as a church, and this last year we had some bumps along the way, and I'm sure this next year's will have more bumps. But the point of Jesus, what he was saying is how we act towards each other, how we love each other, the tangible, observable ways that people see us love each other, through the good, through the bad, through the hard, through the celebrations, through all of those things, says something about what we really believe to be true about Jesus. And man, I want people to see that here. I want people to celebrate it here. I want us to have this great reputation in the church as like in the community. If you want to really be loved, go to that church. I want us to have that reputation. And I think we're making some good strides. We're making some good progress here. And I just want to be a cheerleader to say, let's do it more and more and more into the future. Let's keep loving each other in Jesus' name in crazy, irrational ways. And I think if we can do that as a church and we'll make our mark or show our mark, we're just going to have a community filled with people going, what is going on over there? I want to go find out. And then they hear about Jesus. And then he becomes their Savior. It makes for great evangelism. So on one side, I want to say, great job. You guys are doing great on one side. On the other side, I want us to be motivated to look and have our radars on high for ways to do this better this next year.